Okay, I'm not touching anything now. So how do we stop the fire that's not just raging outside, right? The actual killing of bodies. And when I say that, I don't mean just the intention around the ceasefire weekend, as we've learned, as we've been practicing with the intention, but the violence against Black and brown bodies, anti-Blackness, as we've seen in this past week, random acts of violence against Black people, Black bodies, not just within our communities, but police violence. And not just police violence, but systematic violence, right? That the pandemic has brought clear that we live in a society where there's systematic violence against Black people and brown people, people of color, indigenous folks, poor people. So there's just all these levels of violence that is being perpetuated in our communities. From the interpersonal in our very neighborhoods to the local systems of housing that doesn't allow affordable housing, where we have homelessness, to the lack of adequate transportation for people who need it, to the lack of healthcare, to the lack of proper security, to the lack of appropriate education, where this week the budget for the school change was vetoed by the governor. So just within our local systems, we have violence perpetuated against historically marginalized communities that have been historically under-resourced. And then we go into the national level, where, as the pandemic is revealing, the health disparities and wealth disparities that are embedded in our society, so that anytime anything that comes, the same group of people are disproportionately impacted and are pushed deeper into the trenches without a lifeline. And so this practice that we're engaged in is one that can offer us something to take care of that. And it starts with, how do we make ourselves? It always starts with us, right? How do we make ourselves grounded and an oasis in our own selves, self-protection, so that whatever winds come by, be it someone causing harm right near us, violent physical harm, or a system that continuously perpetuates harm, whatever the wind of the society is, whatever wind blows against us, how are we able to maintain a groundedness that can withstand anything that comes? Because right now we're feeling the effects of a pandemic, and it's a big wind, and it's blowing us, and some of us are getting uprooted, and some of us are barely holding on, and some of us are really rooted. And then some of us are trying to figure out, what do I need to do to stay rooted and not get pulled out and carried away like a tree that doesn't have deep roots, right? And so this ability to ground ourselves, to be firmly established inside ourselves, right? This oasis of protection, how do we maintain that? So In Buddhism, we talk about 10 ways that we can take care of finding this oasis, cultivating this oasis every day in our daily lives, so that this training continuously imprints into us. A lifestyle that's compatible with awakening, that values ourselves, that allows us to be in the world with bringing the least distress to people around us, to ourselves and to people around us, to cultivate a happiness and a peacefulness that doesn't harm others in the process of bringing us happiness and peace. And the first one is virtuous thoughts and behaviors. So this is basically the five mindfulness trainings that we recite every couple months, where we don't lie, we don't steal, we don't cause harm, we don't take intoxicants that that consume things that bring the mind to a place of not being able to be virtuous, and not causing sexual misconduct in others or ourselves. So we bring these trainings into our daily lives. We don't just recite them, but in our daily lives, we do that, right? We think about, am I about to tell a lie? And we notice the mind, and we remember these trainings. So that's one, right? Virtuous thought and behavior. Have we heard the Dharma, right? Number two, have we heard the Dharma? So that is, do we seek out teachings that bring ethical conduct to mind? And why is this? We want to be hearing wise things so that when we're in the midst of some situation, some heated argument, some difficult task, that we have wisdom in us. We've heard wise things that quickly gets recalled and helps us make wise decisions and act in wise ways. So do we seek out Dharma, the teachings of the ethical ones, the teaching of the ancestors that have taught us the right way? Do we have admirable friends? So this is a really big teaching in Buddhism. In some suttas, it says that the most important thing on the path of awakening is admirable friends. And what's admirable friends? These are people who are good examples, people with conviction that practice generosity and virtue and discernment. And there's so many sutras and teachings in the text about if you wrap within a leaf seasons that are pleasant to the smell, and they remove the leaf, the leaf smells like that pleasant smell. And if you wrap a leaf with foul smelling things and you remove it, the leaf smells like the foul smelling things. And this is the same thing as having admirable friends. If we are around people who don't have the qualities that we want to live our lives, then those are the qualities that we are picking up. Just like a leaf that wraps itself with seasons that are aromatic and seasons that aren't. So who are we listening to? What are we listening to? And what is the society listening to? So this is a really important question. Why are we shooting each other in our neighborhoods? What is someone listening to if they can take a gun and shoot their brother and their sister? What have they been listening to? What are the politicians and the rich people who influence policy, when they can make policies that harm the same group of people over and over again? What have they been listening to? Who have they been listening to? Who are their friends? And a system, national system, that continuously demonize the same group of people, black and brown people, poor people. What's in their conscious mind? Who have they been listening to? Who have their parents and their grandparents been listening to? What have they been wrapping themselves around? And so the people we are around, is they're really a big influence in who we are and the stories that we believe and we tell each other. The next one is being easy to teach, not being stubborn to learn. Can we take instructions from everyone? Do we see everyone as a teacher, or do we have these preconceptions as to what a teacher and who a teacher looks like, and when we can listen to instructions? And so being a good learner also, it doesn't mean we just take everything we hear. It means we listen and then we think it over. And it's in the thinking over and the listening that we come to a decision as to whether we follow what we've heard. But in order to be able to listen and think it over, we first have to be a good learner. We have to be open to listening and hearing what is being said. And that means even from people who may say things that we think is off-putting and completely goes against what we believe in. Can we listen with an ear of openness? Can we think it through and then make a decision, as opposed to not being able to be open to hearing? Because it's kind of why we're in some of the situations we're in. We're unable to sit with others who have different opinions than us. We think we can't learn from anyone who doesn't agree with us, or politics, or economic ways that we think. And so these are things we have to think about, is are we listening? Can we be taught? The next one is being adept at things that are useful for those around you. And so basically that means just being able to help others. So if you're able to help others, that's a real way to develop solidity and a sense of not just worth for yourself, but valuing those around you, to be able to have skills that you can help others. You build trust, you build relationships. And when you're in need, you have people who are more than happy to support you and help you, because you've been practicing with generosity continuously, not expecting it to be reciprocated. The other one is a desire, desiring the Dharma. So when we're in regular everyday conversations, are we noting in those conversations ethical basis? And it doesn't have to be an outright talking about the Dharma. It's just, if you're in a conversation where it's really not pleasant, it's really not lifting up anything that is ethical and good and true, when we stay around those kinds of conversations, we can lose our stability and our center. New things become our groundedness and our center. These things become our go-to. So we must desire the values, and we must seek out conversations and engagements that at its basis has ethical thinking and behavior in it. And that's with your friends, your partners, your family. We don't allow ourselves to get pulled into conversations that take us into places that are not ethical. It kind of comes back to the, who are we listening to? Because if we keep listening to the same thing, these are the things that are going to imprint, and these are the things that are going to easily come up in those moments of quickness and promptness and quick engagement. That's what's going to come right up, because that's what we've been practicing. That's what we've been wrapping ourselves around. That's what we've been listening to. Persistence. These are things we think about, right? Not giving into things when they get hard. So the pandemic is a hard thing. It's a big wind that's really trying to pull us out of our rootedness. But can we see that the pandemic is really a big iteration of daily life? Because there's always winds coming at us. There's little winds always coming at us. This is the nature of the life that we're in. And so can we see that we have to be persistent with this big one and continue our practice of consistency, being persistent in how we want to continue to develop our path of awakening, our path of rootedness, solidity, protecting the values that we believe in. Contentment. Yeah, this is a very important one, because if we don't have contentment, we continuously seek things to be happy and joyful. And those seeking is what often results in us getting very easily distracted and pulled away from our center. And so if we can remember that contentment is really a really important step on this path, can we find joy in the simple things that are right here? There's so much here already. Again, the pandemic makes us feel we're missing something, because this is an imposed, whatever it is that we're doing, whatever it is, whatever capacity we're in right now, it is not by choice. It is all imposed right now. And so are we still with this big imposition on us? Especially as Americans, we have this very big individualistic ego about freedom. And so any kind of perceived imposition almost twerks the genetic material. And so it's a hard time for a society that advertises itself as land of the free, home of the brave, right? So how can we find contentment now? How can we burst out of this superimposed essentialism, imperialism of America that touts individualism as its namesake, and find contentment within that now? Because that's a contentment that's going to come from an inner freedom, that groundedness, that rootedness that we're talking about now, that's never taught. It's not taught to us in school. It's not taught to us in society. We're never taught about contentment. We're taught about always reaching for more. So contentment is it's the opposite of what the ethic of the country is. And it's what allows us to continuously produce and grab and consume, right? And it feeds capitalism. So it's ripe for exploitation. And so contentment, really, you might almost say, is the opposite of capitalism. Because once we start finding contentment inside, then we don't go out consuming so much. So this is a really, really important step here. And especially now, can we find contentment in the things that we have, the breath, that we can walk, that we can breathe, that we have food to eat. Mindfulness, this is one we're familiar with, practicing this in everyday life, observing our steps, observing, taking every moment to observe and notice, and finding the breath to help us come back to this moment. And not just because it's a wonderful moment, but it's a moment that we can decide how it's going to be if we're aware of it. If not, it's just heedlessness, and we're not even aware. It just, you know, we're just kind of sleepwalking. But mindfulness allows us this ability to be aware. And in that awareness, we make choices. Am I going to do it this way or not? This is what starts to change the way we bring ourselves into the world. And the last one is discernment. This is when we are able to make a decision. What am I going to do? Am I going to do this or that? And this is one that it really requires many of the steps that we talked about to really get to the point where we make choices that are informed by the previous 9 steps. We know what is skillful and we know what's not, and we follow what is skillful. And we start to let go of these things that we've been taught that that's worthwhile. We start to see that, oh no, maybe not quite true. So I'm going to stop because I want us to have enough time for Dharma sharing. But I invite us to reflect on these 10 steps, and I have another document that's cleaner, but that's what I was trying to find. Yeah, and I'll send that out that everyone might have. So thank you for listening.